Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, good evening. I'm Larry Halverson from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. I have the pleasure of talking to you about the man you're about to listen to, Doc Stanley, the legendary Doc Stanley. I always say, before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. When you listen to Doc Stanley, you have to appreciate the knowledge, the connection. When he's at the ballpark during baseball, he's around the water cooler talking to the athletes. When he's at the basketball games, he's in the locker room talking to players, talking to general managers, talking to front office personnel to bring you the insight why people make the decisions they make. When he's on the ice skating rink, he's talking to some of the few African-American, African-Canadian, African players who are on the ice right now making a difference. You are listening to Doc Stanley on Sports and Death.
As always, we open up Sports and Death with a prayer. John Coltrane, legendary. Dear Lord. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. More importantly, have your will, have your way. We thank you, Lord, for little things that we so largely take for granted. And we also, Lord, that give us what we need and we hope it's also what we want. We thank you, Lord, for another day. We thank you for as Father's Day approaches, that we have memories of the great fathers we had, and lucky some of us who still have our fathers with us. Those are our great fathers. That's Marion Boykin and Larry H. Hardesty, and also Cincinnati Seawings. We thank you for another day. And with that, we're going to have some studio problems here, too. Back and forth, going to studio. And, of course, we want to have the intro done by the man who coined the phrase Sports and Death Nation. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I bring to you Mel Cosell Smith Jr. Ronnie, it's your time.
Good doctor, the Sports and Definition is here. The Sports In Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that stirs the drink is here. And that is indeed the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, Doc.
Thank you, Rooney, for those kind words. Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth. Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God. And we're back in Nueva York, as they would say in Portuguese, and also in Spanish. It's today, Puerto Rican Day, and we open up the catalog of photos. The greatest Hispanic player and Puerto Rican player ever, Roberto Clemente Walker. We have Roberto right there, and also we have in the catalog the lady yesterday, who is the oldest female to ever regain the number one ranking. Her won her 16th Grand Slam title, her second French Open title, the first in 10 years, the incomparable, the living legend that she is, Serena Williams. And also we have in the pictures, as we also remember in her birthday this month, we think about Leroy Neiman yesterday, who would have been his 92nd birthday, Leroy. I remember calling Leroy last year on a Friday, and it was his birthday, his 91st birthday, and in about another 7 to 10 days, it will be the anniversary of his passing. Other photos, too. We had Clemente. We also have Serena Williams. And I just thought it was kind of apropos. I had read a story the other day. It was really a article that I'd had. A lot of times I go into magazines and I pull out an article that I don't have time to read for whatever reason, and I'll just pull it out and save it for later. And it's a piece that Jerry West had, a very interesting article, as in the names of captions today, I have Roberto Clemente, Arturo Schomburg, the Hispanic Jewish, who teacher had told his class to go home and do an assignment on their heritage. And but she had told Arturo there's no need to do any on his because black people had no heritage. As you know, the Schomburg Center is named after him and the one that he started in recognition of the accomplishments of African Americans. And wow, they are so numerous. African Americans have been the foundation of the core of everything in the existence of mankind. And the other names we had, the two, Clemente, Schomburg, Serena Williams, Kobe Bryant, Jerry West, and Magic Johnson. Very unique coloration there, which we'll talk about later. Birthdays, remembering, on the 8th, Prince. Prince, who, I was in Bill last week, watching a documentary Bill Boggs had. Miles Davis is a guest on the show, and he talked about Prince being a genius and Prince being part Marvin Gaye, part James Brown, and reminded him so much also of Charlie Chaplin. And Allen Iverson, was there a greater little big man than Allen in the game of basketball? I think not. And as remember, Marion B. Borkin always talked about in the B stands for Black, Bodacious, Brilliant Brother. As they talked about Allen, they realized that Allen Iverson not only was a great basketball player, well, not only was a great football player, but Allen Iverson, as Borger said, came from one of the highest institutes of learning in America, Georgetown University. And we have a birthday to him. We think also, as Dusty Baker will have a birthday next week, so he wants to have a birthday to Dusty. It'll be the 15th, along with the standing writer from Black Sports, BlackAthlete.com, Francis Walker. And those are some of the names that we had. Then we'll go back to some of the names again. That Jerry West, Magic Johnson, Kobe Bryant, that's going to be a nice little story. The Heat got it warmed up tonight, got it straightened out. Wow, that 2-3 format they better had tonight. But tonight was a big win for them. LeBron James didn't have a triple-double, but everybody else was on the money. They had 5-6 plays in double figures. A big, big win. I tell you, a huge win. It was a win that they had to have, they better have, and they got it tonight as they beat the Spurs, who accomplished just about what you want. I mean, you're trying to win every game, but to win that first game was huge. But tonight, Miami, 103-84. Winners went on a 33-5 run, and that was it. LeBron James, 70 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists. He had a triple-double in the first game. The first game, though, they lost very simply, as me and Hoopsa were talking about it. It's just they didn't make the free throws. I mean, you just have to make your free throws. It's just that simple. That's why they call them free throws. You have to make them. They didn't make them, and it cost them. But right now, they're kind of right at the ship, and they will be going to Texas. 1-1 instead of 0-2, but everybody thought there may be 2-0. But if I remember correctly, last year they started the same way, too, losing the first game. It's the first 1-4, so it doesn't matter how many you lose in between, as long as you don't lose 4. And they have won big tonight. 1-0.
Yeah, well, they better have won big tonight, Doc. Pardon me for cutting you off. They better have won big. Because even though you don't count the defending champions out at any time, as far as I'm concerned, for all intents and purposes, if they go down 0-2, having to go back to San Antonio, they are in deep, deep water. So this is basically, for all intents and purposes, a must-win for them. They had to win this game. They go back in San Antonio 0-2, they're in deep, deep water, Doc.
Huge win, no doubt about it. Let me do this real quickly for you as we go. You know, we did our last 6-7 shows in the Brazil, Fortaleza. Billy Ball will be in Fortaleza on the 14th of this month. He's in San Paulo on the 11th. And on the 12th, Valentine's Day, the adult will be in Mojave. He'll be in Rio de Janeiro. And Billy will be in Fortaleza. And this time, singing that song, which is one of the iconic songs in the history of music, Me and Mrs. Jones. And we want to salute him. Give our wishes to his lovely lady Blanche. Blanche had a fracture arm, so we just want to hope that she's feeling better. And he'll be in Fortaleza. We also take this time to salute our sponsors, Sally Brazza, Louis Sousa's Sally Brazza Restaurant, Tapajero Hotel, the best three-star hotel in all of Brazil, Destinos Hotel, DCJ Productions, which was the studios that we broadcast from our last show. We also did two shows from the Tapajara Hotel, and, of course, Marina Park and Chipito's. So those are our sponsors back here stateside, and Lady A will have other sponsors for us that she will come on later on and join us. And the thing that I want to get on real quickly about Magic, Jerry and Kobe. Jerry said that he thought that Kobe Bryant was the greatest Laker because of what he had to play with as players, you know, excluding the winning, especially winning after Shaq. And he said something that was very interesting. He said, you know, Magic never won a championship without Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And he said, you know, Magic had some great players on the floor with him. You know, you take away Shaq from the equation, and everybody said Kobe would never win without him. And, you know, everybody was said very good players. But, I mean, you look at Magic came down the floor. Norm Nixon was one of the greatest players ever played. Never got okay, so Norm left. But he comes down the floor. If he doesn't throw the ball into Kareem, Hall of Famer, he can pass it down to Worthy. That's three of the 50 greatest players ever played this game of basketball. And, you know, Kobe, as close to Jerry was, and Jerry was very humble about it because the guy said, you know, when you talk about great players, and Jerry said, well, you know, he felt that had he won more championships, he could kind of speak a little louder. But, I mean, you talk about Jerry West. I mean, people forget, when they talk about big guards, Oscar Robertson and Jerry West is an amazing stat about these guys. These two guys were All-American forwards in college. All-American forwards in college and came their very first year in the pros and played the guard. But just show how fundamentally sound guys are. And when they picked the greatest backcourt of the first 35 years of the NBA, who was in the backcourt? Oscar Palmer Robinson and Jerry West. 27 points from a game, Jerry, 52 points from the backcourt. And I tell this story redundantly over and over again about how great Oscar Robinson. I mean, I remember Jerry West. Well, I talked to Jerry one time. He said it took him a long time to catch up to Oscar Robertson. Nobody ever caught Oscar Robertson. And he said something. I'll never forget the All-Star game. Jerry hit the jump shot that won the game for the West, and they called Jerry over. And, hey, Jerry, great, boom, boom, boom. Jerry said, what was the key to that play? And Jerry looked at it, not like he was crazy. And Jerry said, all we were trying to do was get the ball to Oscar. I mean, it reminded me of Pete Rose talking about Willie Mays. Says, you know, you have to remind yourself. I want to find that quote here. I have it somewhere. He talked about Pete Rose. Let me give you the exact quote, Pete Rose. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network, live back from New York City. The crew is all here. Some big fights last night, too. And you talked about a big,
got a lot
big
to
win
say
here.
About those two, good doctor. A lot to say
yeah.
about those.
Yeah, yeah.
We got to get this party started because I have very opinionated in this week's show, trust me.
When are you not? When are you not? Hold on a second now. It's a great quote by Pete Rose, who should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, that's, we've redundantly went with that and a horde of reasons why he isn't and all that kind of stuff. But one of the great players. I'm looking at Stan Musial stats. They sent me something. You know, Stan Musial missed a year. I think he missed a year or two in the Navy. He retired with 3,600 hits. You know, he had a shot at 4,000 hits, Eddie. He didn't miss that military time. But the great rule by Pete Rose. Watch many years ago, this is how Pete Rose described Willie Mays. When you play on the same field as him, sometimes you have to remind yourself that you're playing on the same field as him because you don't belong there because nobody does. God talk, man. It's no more to say. God talk, there's no more to say. You know, the great Willie Mays. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio and the Trust and Drive Internet. Once again, Sal E. Brazza, Hesterot, Louis Souza's restaurant, Chapajada, number three star, best result in all of Brazil, Chapitos, and also Arena Park and DCJ Productions, which will bring you on the 11th in São Paulo, Brazil, Billy Paul on the 12th in Rio de Janeiro, and their last stop will be the 14th in my beloved Fortaleza, capital city in the state of Ceará. The Baladia, who's become Mr. Valentine's Day, the 12th of June is Valentine's Day in Brazil. May 1st is Labor Day, every place else in the world, but here, that's really amazing. Father's Day is not celebrated next week in Brazil. Father's Day is not till August, even though across the world, Father's Day is celebrated as it is in the United States. Ironically enough, my daughter, her and Turquoise sent me two funny cards years ago, and one Demony sent Father's Day card, and she said, you know how Father's Day come along? She said about inside the card, I said about 4 weeks after Mother's Day, somebody said, oops. And Father's Day came about. And my daughter Turquoise sent me another card. She said, this year is a recycled card which serves as not only as a Father's Day card for you, but on the inside it says, it's also your gift. And Turquoise, named after her godmother, the former Mrs. Julius Turquoise Irving. And Demony, enough said about Demony Dem. And Mother's Day, as I told you, celebrated worldwide. Father's Day is not done the same way. Father's Day does not come in Brazil until August. And right now, we're coming in Cincinnati, C. Let's get to you real quickly. I got the jet credential request. So, we'll be looking to do some football, but now what's the latest in the world of football before we get to a lot of boxing, a whole lot of boxing going on, too. Last night's fights and some forthcoming fights this month. Cincinnati C, it's NFL 411. What's happening in the world of the gridiron?
I must first say good evening to and welcome back to the incomparable Doc Stanley. Hello to Mel Cosell and our panel out there and our listeners. And I must say, let's not forget the memory of Burt Randolph Sugar, whose birthday passed this past Friday, in memory of one of boxing's greatest historians and writers, and just a great man. And I
hold on,
also
you tell me Burt's birthday was on the 8th?
It's on the 7th.
Oh, okay. I never knew that. You know, I never could know that Bird has the same birthday then as Prince and Allen Iverson. And not
yeah.
only that, it was the birthday just before that of another dear friend of ours. Leroy Neiman. Also, I want to take this time to happy birthday to Bobby Goodman, whose birthday is also the same as Leroy Neiman's. And as we go back, we also, the Hoopster, whose birthday was on the 3rd of this month, wants a happy birthday to him. And other birthdays coming up this month, Derek Jeter is on the 26th. Dusty Baker is on the 15th. The legendary Beto Duran on the 16th. Stephanie Graf, talking about great female tennis players, she's on the 14th. Serena Williams We salute once again her 16th Grand Slam title, her second French Open title. She's the number one female tennis player in the world and the oldest player ever to gain the number one ranking. And yesterday she just ran through the seeds number one and two, her and Sharova. She beat her in straight sets. And once again, Serena Williams has won the French Open, the first time since 2002. She's really upset because last year, how quickly a year goes by, she got knocked out in the first round by the 111th ranked player in the world. And as we know, she ascended to the number one ranking in the world. And yesterday, she won her 16th Grand Slam title. And she's, I think, third or fourth on all-time list and proven to be, in some eyes, the greatest female tennis player of all time. So we're doing it. Okay, so we got Bert, and I think you were up at the Hall, you and Lady A up at the Hall of Fame this weekend, right?
Oh, yeah. It didn't seem the same without seeing Bert there with a cigar and fedora and those signature shoes he would wear in the white outfit. So it was definitely a void there. It just didn't seem the same. But I must say that it was here, Doc, that you got Angela, Bert on here on the show.
Yeah, last February, right? You're right. When Angelo passed, the same month Angelo and one of the Petronelli brothers who worked in the marvelous Marvin Hagler's corner, and it was amazing because I hadn't seen Bert for a while and called him at home. Bert, hey, why are you doing? Hey, Doc, where have you been? Oh, Doc, I ain't been feeling too well. You know, I was in the hospital. You're in the hospital. How the heck you in the hospital? Nobody knows. But, oh, Doc, my bones and his thing. And we talked for a while. And then, okay, hey, Bert, look, I'm doing something on that. Oh, sure, Doc. And you remember, gang, you were the Howard Cosell, Mel Cosell, and he talked with us. And after about a good half hour, 45 minutes, you know, he begged off. Little did we know that in the ensuing month, Bert Sugar 2 would be departing and joining the likes of Angelo Dundee, Smoking Joe Frazier, and a host of other boxing dignitaries. Emmanuel hadn't departed yet. Emmanuel was still with us, but in the latter part of the year, you're right. I was working out the other day, you know, in Brazil. What I do is I go down and I run on the beach. I got into the habit of boxing 6-7 rounds, 3-minute rounds, and I just, you know, you can't. You know, the thing about Emmanuel is I remember how, you know, there are certain guys, gentlemen in this business who befriended me. You know, it was Julius Erving who said, "Hey Mel, you're not gonna talk to me today." And it was Barry Bonds, who Eddie Murray. You know, these guys stepped toward me and said, "Hey man, you know." Opened the doors to the friendship. And Emmanuel was one of them. I remember the jacket that I have, and we were the first and only fight ever held at the Jacob Javits Center. And he came in, and we talked as we always did. And if I could, I'd get him on the phone with Marion. And he said, hey, you know, you need one of my jackets, you know. And he told this guy, hey, look, talk to him and make sure Mel gets a jacket. And I get a guy my name and everything. And maybe 2 months. 3 months later, I said, hey, I like the jacket. I said, I didn't get a jacket. What? He said, jacket. Did he get a jacket? I said, hey, take this number, call this guy. And it's the Kronk jacket, as we know. He took the Kronk gym to heights unparalleled. Tommy Hearns, Hel McKenty, Mike McCollum, Mark Breland. The champions that he trained are numerous, as I have this posted. Anybody, everybody, Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, Evander Holyfield, Oscar De La Hoya, Prince Nassim, Lennox Lewis, the Klitschko brothers. It's going to be amazing to see where they're going to go and how they're going to do without his guides and tutelage. I remember, when I think it was Larry Torres for that new boxing series that's on Fridays at Madison Square Garden, and they were doing talking about the Alexis De Goyo and Aaron Pryor's second fight, and there was two things they talked about. You know, Mark Breland talked about how, and people forget that it was Evander, it was Emmanuel who trained prior for that second fight, and he talked about the calm and the cool that Emmanuel instills into his fighters, and the classic line that he talked about after the fight. You know, somebody said that Aguayo said he would retire. And somebody said, well, you know, you're retiring that, you know, that dynamite left hand of yours. And Aguayo said, yeah, and the right hand too. It was a great fight. I remember that fight. I thank Larry Torres so much too. Great series too. John Duddy and Mark Breland, the greatest amateur fighter ever lived. 110-1. In fact, you know, it's a great segue because I'm sitting here in the studio in the New York studio. I look up, there is a robe, Mark Breland autographed robe that I gave to my daughter Demi. Met Demi when she's 4 or 5 years old. You know, loved her. So he gave the robe to Demi. And he gave me a pair of his boxing shoes. 110-1 as an amateur, considered the next Sugar Ray Robinson. He won a gold medal, won every conceivable award at his highest level as an amateur and a two-time world champion. And Mark told me that the thing that really turned him off as a pro was the fact that, you know, that you couldn't have the camaraderie that you had. You know, if Rooney's with Top Rank and Cincinnati Sea Wings is with Don King, I'm with Main Events, you know, they're a friendship that can't be forged to a certain degree. And as, you know, as amateur, you know, you didn't have those restrictions, and it took, you said, a lot of the fun out of the game. And you could see that. You could take a lot of the fun out of the game. And but just getting a chance to get into the, let's talk about Bert Sugar too.
And Angelo.
And, you know, Angelo's book, My View from the Corner, was written by Bert. And I remember Bert getting me a copy, and he autographed the book, and Leroy did the cover. And I got Leroy to autograph it, and Angelo was the last person to autograph his portion of the book for me. And fight at AC, and we, you know, chatted for a while, and he autographed it for me, and that's the last time I saw him. But as also, I have a section of books in the Trust and Guard Sports and Everything Artifacts Hall of Fame. It's all autographed books by the authors. And there's Ali, autographed, there's Larry Holmes, Bert Sugar, of course, Joe Frazier, Charles Barkley. I was surprised, too, as I looked at Kirby Puckett. Kirby Puckett, Joe Morgan. Just some of the names of some of the athletes. Emmitt Smith. Just looking at some of the other books that I have there. Also got had a book of the All-Stars from 1992 All-Star Game, get everybody signed that. But the books are just the authors, Tony Brown, another one of the authors that I have. I'm just trying to remember your fingers. I looked at it for a while. I got some of the names that I had. I told you that Ali, Joe Frazier, Charles Barkley, Larry Holmes, Bert Sugar, Emmitt Smith, Pat Riley, Coach Pat Riley at the time he was coach of the Knicks, and just a host of other names. I just there's about maybe a good 80 books that's autographed by the authors. Some of the writers also there's a Bill Gallo, Leroy Neiman, autographed book in that section. And it's kind of quite unique. Like I said, you know, just things are collected. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. And we are here back in New York City, our last show. I want to thank everybody. You know, the show, our show 2 weeks ago, live from Fort Lazy, Brazil. We want to thank everybody listening. It's been our highest listening audience in the Trust and Guard Radio Network since we moved over from Blake Radio. Just the numbers were just, we want to thank you so much for your listening. You know, if you ever want to call in, 646-200-0373, 646-200-0373, 646-200-0373. Join us, ask the question, Cincinnati C, Mel Cosell, Lady A, Hoops, and myself. We always want to thank you for listening. It's just so much, you know, Sports In-Depth brings you an in-depth look and a different perspective on not only the sports, but the athletes that perform and play the games and the events. And we just appreciate so much your listenership, and just was fascinated that the Brazilian show, and we also thank the sponsors over there, Sali Braza, Chipitos, Tabajada, GCJ Productions, and also Marina Park Hotel. And we just want to say, again, saluting that birthday wishes. Cincinnati, let's get back to you real quick. Football, so we can get to Mel Cosell, talk a little boxing. It seems that, I mean, they still haven't solved this thing with Victor Cruz and the Giants. What's happened here?
Oh, not only with Victor Cruz, don't forget Hakeem Nicks. You got two top 20 NFL wideouts who are not showing up for the OTAs. But you can, you may see them show up for the mandatory OTAs, or you will see fines upwards of topping up $50,000-$60,000. So we hope to see progress in those talks. I still have faith that the Giants and the two wideouts, Victor Cruz, Hakeem Nicks, who also experienced injury throughout the 2012 season, but he is still due his credit for being, you know, a great wideout. Victor Cruz, nice slot receiver. It's looking for excess of over $7 million of what $7 million is what the Giants offered him, and he's looking for more. I mean, as you know, in the world of NFL, nothing's guaranteed. Such a short career, so these guys try to get more bang for their buck. But they also have to understand that it's a business, and the organization's going to do what's best for the organization. Not to say that they won't bring him and get that contract signed before the season, but it's going to be a very interesting training camp, the upcoming mandatory workouts, and we'll see what goes on from there. But I expect to see them get signed in the next couple of weeks. I mean,
we've been saying that about Cruz for 2 months, for the whole summer. I mean, for the summer, it's coming in now, but for the spring, we were saying to get this thing signed. But quickly, we have to stop and remember the passing of the great Diggin' Jones, the man who coined the word sack and was one of, considered by many, the greatest sack man of all time, I guess outside of Lawrence Taylor, from a lineman position. And Diggin, part of the fearsome foursome, one of the great football players in the early days of football, who paved the way for a lot of guys today. And just want to, everybody here, our condolences and sympathy to the family members. And just when you talk about Diggin Jones, he's one of the great, great football players of all time. And they said had they kept sack totals in his day, I think he said 1 year he had about 20, 30-something sacks. You know what I mean? But they just didn't count them. But Diggin Jones, now the Diggin has gone on to the other church. And we send our condolences to his family. And the L.A. Rams, he was part of that fearsome foursome and one of the great football players of all time. And his name is in our tags, you know, as I said, you know, Diggin Jones. We talked about, as I said, Kobe, Jerry West, and Magic Johnson, Serena Williams, Arturo Schomburg, you know, Roberto Clemente is here. Today was Puerto Rican Parade Day here. There was never a greater right fielder, for my money, that ever played the game, Roberto Clemente Walker. There never will be a greater right fielder, for my money. His last hit was his 3,000 base hit, a rifle arm. But more than that, it was the thing that he did. The ultimate measure of a man is not what he stands in times of company convenience, but what he stands in times of trial and controversy. And Clemente was the civil rights leader as a Hispanic down in the Pittsburgh area, you know what I mean? And the famed number 21, we know service to others is venture paid for your space here on earth. Greater gift have no man in this that he laid down his life for his friend. Clemente, as we know, was on that plane going to Nicaragua. There was reports that the items and clothes that were sent there were being not given to the proper people, and the soldiers were taking them. Clemente went to make sure, and then never found his body. Number 21, on September 1st, 1971, Roberto Clemente was part of the first all-black lineup in the history of Major League Baseball. On the mound, Doc Ellis. Behind the plate, Manny Sanguin. At third base, Jose Pagan. Shortstop was Fernandez. Second base, Dave Cash. First base, Willie Stargell. Left field, Gene Kline. Center field, Al Oliver. And right field, of vertical minutes. Jackie Fernandez was a shortstop. Danny Murtaugh fielded the first black all-black lineup September 1st, 1971. And Clemente was part of that history, became the second Hispanic player to win the MVP award. Roberto Clemente was the first Hispanic player to win the MVP award in the National League. The second player to win it was Orlando Cepeda, who became the first unanimous winner of the MVP award since Carl Hubbell. He's the first everyday player to win the National League. But the year before, 1965, Zorro Fasales in the American League became the first Hispanic player to win the MVP award. The next year, 1966, Roberto Clemente became the first Hispanic player to win the MVP award in the National League. And just a great, great player, great human being. One of the great lines is, anytime you have a chance, help somebody out, and you don't do it, then you're just wasting your time here on Earth. And Puerto Rican Day Parade, we told you about Arturo Schomburg. Serena Williams is also one of the pitchers. And we also remembering Leroy Neiman. Getting back to the photos later. Okay, getting back to you. We mentioned Deegan Jones. What's happening in Jet Camp? Does anybody really care what's happening in Jet Camp? And I'm hearing that the one of the quarterbacks may emerge as the number one quarterback, even though, according to Rex Ryan, Sanchez gives everybody the best chance to win. What's the story?
I mean, this is an ongoing, it's sort of a show, such as Survivor. The fittest will survive, but we have to start to see where the fittest comes from. I mean, you look at Sanchez, he's going to be forever known for the butt fumble. I mean, throughout his career, the lack of, faith in himself. I mean, just the rotation with bringing, the different guys here. And it's such an uncertainty right now at the quarterback, at the starting position. Quarterback position. I mean, you've even had Broadway Joe. I mean, has become of late a big critic of the team. Seems to be, it's been reported that there, I would say, some, jarring going back and forth between him and the owner, Woody Johnson. So, I mean, this is going to be an interesting season. I mean, you got a lot of guys in the huddle that Mark Sanchez is going to be unfamiliar with. You got a quarterback, Geno Smith, that was drafted. He's have to look over his shoulder. I mean, it's just such an odd oddity. Out of the 32 teams, the Jets stick out, not for how they play, but what goes on behind the scenes. I mean, you're really going to have to monitor this. We'll see this in training camp. It's just... I can't put my finger to it. I mean, I try to put my finger there, and there's nothing there at this point. So, I mean, this is something to be monitored. We'll see more, Doc, when we cover the training camp. We'll see how, with the wide receiver core, hopefully coming back, with Stephen Hill being injured. His receiving core was banged up last year, so... I mean, this team has really undergone a significant change in the offseason with the general manager, the defensive coach, the special teams coach. I mean, it's gonna be a lot of question marks on this team this year to see if they will even get to 500. I mean, they're gonna be facing a lot of good quarterbacks, a lot of good teams. So, they got Atlanta, they got New England twice, which is always tough. You got a burgeoning Miami team. They got some of their players, So, we'll see with this team. I mean, it's really too early to call with them. Jason Pierre-Paul from the New York Giants underwent back surgery last week. So that's going to call for, a shift in the defense.
And I'll get the back surgery now. So, I mean, that Rooney kind of validates. Does it satisfy you why he wasn't as effective as he had been in the previous season, Rooney?
Are you talking to me, Doc?
I'm sorry,
JPP has some back surgery, so I think that should validate some of the deficiencies that you were complaining about last year. He wasn't 100% healthy.
Oh, yeah, well, indeed, Doc. He was absolutely playing hurt, like you said, with the back thing. I mean, that's why his sack total went down from, I believe, 16 the year before last to 6 last year, indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously the guy was playing, hurt, Doc, because as I had said before, it wasn't a JPP type of year. And so now we know the reason why, or at least one of the reasons why the guy was playing hurt. Not only getting double teamed all year, but playing hurt, obviously, you know, with the back problems also. So, yeah, we come to see that he had off-season surgery. I don't know how long he's supposed to be out. You have any idea, see, how long he's supposed to be recuperating from this back surgery? But obviously he wasn't himself, you know, during the course of the year.
There
was
some
obviously.
Speculation that he may be ready for the season opener, which I highly doubt. I mean, when it comes to back injuries and surgeries, it is a uncharted territory as to, you know, how soon you come back from that injury. I mean,
does one ever really come from back from that? I mean, you talk about backs. Does one really, especially a player of his caliber, his position, and the type of opposition that he has? I mean, he's always going to be double teamed. Does
always,
I mean, as we look back in history of this game, has anybody really come back 100% from back surgery? I mean, back surgery is just. I think it's just confirmed that, you know, you come back, you're not ever going to be 100%.
Never, Doc.
I mean, you look at some guys.
I'm sorry, please, go right ahead.
Yeah. I mean, you look at some guys. I mean, you look at AP with the ACL injury
we're talking about not only an exception. We're talking about something that has never, ever happened before with him. I understand that.
There's always a possibility. I mean, there's always a possibility. It's how much – when you look at the National Football League now compared to 30, 40, 50 years ago, you have the best trainers, you have the best conditioning. These guys are bigger, stronger now. I mean, just their whole totally different – conditioning.
You know that's true, but the downside to that is that those guys always played on natural grass. The factor that's always a negative. I remember Eric Swan, my buddy Eric Swan. We talked about that one. He said that every year they would send a question out to the players if they wanted natural grass or turf, and the players overwhelmingly voted for natural, and they get turf. And I think that's one of the biggest. Gail Sayers talked about that too in his book, God is First, My Family and Friends are Second, I am Third. But he played, you know, it was AstroTurf, and you know, he didn't put some of his arm, and he went out there and his arm started responding, and you know, had a potato. So I think that's one of the biggest detriments and the biggest reason why these guys have these injuries is because of all this AstroTurf.
The players know it. It is, and the players know it, Doc, as you well know. Yeah.
But to me, it would seem to me, Rooney, that the owners who are making the, you know, I'm giving Cincinnati Sea Wings a 4-year contract of $37 million. I'm handing you a 2-year deal at 36. You know, I mean, it's going to cost me less than $1 million to put grass on the field. It's going to cost me less than $1 million.
Pennywise, Doc, and Pennywise and Pound Foolish. As the old folks used to say.
No question, man. I just can't understand it. That, you know, you're paying these guys. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster. You're paying them more than ever before. And I mean, the great line that Cincinnati Sea Wings said: NFL, not for long. And the reason why it's not for long because they won't go back to the Astro to the regular grass. I mean, they're building these stadiums. You know, if you can spend that kind of money on a stadium, then you know, put a dome on it. Okay, but the point is,
well,
we say that in
Major League Baseball too, Doc. I mean, you look at teams like the New York Yankees, the New York Mets, the Minnesota Twins. I mean, you've had snowstorms in April in these places,
yeah,
and and you don't have domes on there, retractable
domes.
Right.
You're right, see.
But I think you will see in the future, we may not be around to see it, that Major League Baseball will require, and even maybe in the National Football League, you will see these stadiums are going to be required to have retractable domes in these areas now.
I mean, see, I have said this before, and I will say it again, Doc, and I'm glad I thank goodness that we have your incredible show, you know, to be able to say these things and to put these things out. Because, see, I have been hawking for the last, I don't know, couple of years now, and I will say it again, that my prediction is within the next 25 or 30 years, every new stadium, all stadia will be required to have retractable dome stadiums within the next 25 or 30 years. Every new stadia will be required to have that, because it's like you said, it's only a sensible thing to have these retractable domes.
I mean, you're buying a brand new Rolls Royce, a Jaguar, Mercedes Benz, and you put the cheapest gas in it. You know what I mean? Why send the players out a questionnaire and ask them their opinion if you're not going to listen? But, I mean, I just signed you to a four-year, $50 million deal. Wings, last Friday, he did a three-year, $38 million deal. And I'm not going to put grass down there to help my investment. I mean, the idea, like I said, sad and touching that Howard Wester said, Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio. And once again, the Miami Heat, he got heat up tonight, a 33-5 run. And the Spurs were done. It's a 1-1 series, and now they go to San Antonio, and the 2-3. Rooney, Van Gundy, and I think Beam are the announcers for the TV game. And man, can there be two more boring? I mean, you better just cutting the sound off and watch the
game.
Well,
I was never really a Van Gundy guy to begin with, Doc. Coaching the Knicks, I was never really a Van Gundy guy.
His biggest claim to fame is it was getting in the way of the Patrick the with Alonzo Mourning. But the thing is that I'm looking at that game the other day, and somebody they made a comment. I guess they're good for one comment a year, and they were saying the idea of maybe the league looking at the 2-3-2 format. And going back to the 2-2-1-1-1, maybe the 2-3-2 is good when you have the Celtics against the Lakers, when you have that long. And, you know, and that's nonsense, too. Everybody has chartered planes and chartered flights. I mean, you know, my thing with if you're going to do the 2-3-2, why not start with the three games with the home team and then go two? You know, because you really don't have a home court advantage on a 2-3-2. I mean, like right now, if it's the 0-2-2-1-1-1, okay. So Miami leaves is 1-1. They're assured of coming back home. When did they? You're assured of coming back home. But now there's no sure you're gonna come back home. You know, you got to play three games in San Antonio. You could lose three straight in San Antonio. I mean, you know, it just plays in everybody's hand. I mean, you're thinking I'm better off being the second run up on the 2-3-2 format because it just doesn't make – I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, it's the 21st century. I mean, and it was not like back in the 60s. And then I thought about Stagecoach. I mean, it's crazy. The kind of money the NBA is making, you're telling me you're doing it for travel purposes? You can't even kidding me. It's 2-2 or might think, okay, Rooney, you know, think about the YouTube situation. If you're going to do a 2-3-2, why not do three – okay, at the team with the best record, and then 2-2. Huh? The team with the best, I mean, there's no advantage to winning. Because now, right now, even now, Miami is looking at the chance of not coming back. I mean, the idea is to win the games, too. But the point is, if you do a 2-2-1-1-1, you at least, okay, you lost, okay, you sort of held serve a little bit. It's 2-2. You go there, if you lose a 2 in San Antonio, okay, you still come back, and you can come home. But yeah, this 2-3-2, it just I'm just a little befuddled.
Well, you're right,
by it.
Doc. You're right, Doc. But they don't want to do, obviously, for financial purposes and TV purposes, they don't want to do the 1-1-1 thing, you know? So that's why they're going, you know, the 2-3-2. Obviously, they don't want to do the, as I said, for five. And like you said, with the money, billion-dollar corporation that the NBA is, and you figure, you know, well, what would be the big deal for the extra track, you know, the 1-1-1, but obviously, you know, for financial reasons
or
whatever.
Like I said, then let's switch it then. Instead of 2-3-2, let's go 3-2-2 then. Okay. I mean, you know, now as the team with the best records, okay, I got three games at home. All right? And if I leave out here 0-3, then I shouldn't be coming back home anyway. But if I, you know, but
well,
you got three games at home. You know, but I mean, yeah, and like I said, I heard Jason Kidd is maybe in the running for
he's not going to get that next job, guy. With all of his experience, the guy doesn't have any experience as a pro coach, and especially as a guy,
how much experience did Van Gundy have? As a pro coach,
he's not going to get the bottom line, Doc. Is you know he's not going to get that next gig.
How much experience did Billy Cunningham have? I mean, honestly, I'm just saying.
Well, I never thought Cunningham was a great coach to begin with, but I see your point.
Rooney, my point exactly.
Anybody that had that team that he had,
he had a 3-0 lead of the Celtics and Blues. Anybody that had the team that he had only won one championship. I mean, they should have just hung him up someplace in Philadelphia. He had Dr. J.
Indeed, Doc, indeed, yeah.
But I don't understand how he would even be considered when you got guys like Herb Williams out there. You got guys like Patrick Ewing, who never got a shot.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, like I said, these are the owners, it's their money. But I just think that, you know, guys like that's really been waiting. You know, even Herb Williams, when he was the interim coach of the Knicks and then, went back to an assistant. These guys have the experience. I mean, even Patrick Ewing down in Orlando and stuff like that. And, you know, give these guys a chance. What's his name that coached Knicks last year and went out to the Lakers?
Oh, D'Antoni.
D'Antoni, yeah, who, you know, who has no clue on defense from what I see. And he gets to – he goes from one good franchise in the number one market in New York to the Lakers, second market in the NBA.
Yeah.
You can't give a guy like Patrick Ewing or Herb Williams a halfway chance to become a coach?
You know, it's funny you should have mentioned D'Antoni. Pardon me for cutting you off, Steve. You know, it's funny you should have mentioned D'Antoni because, in my estimation, this guy is the most overrated coach maybe in NBA history, okay? Where's this genius tag coming? You know, every time I hear this guy, offensive genius, Anita, where does this genius tag come with this guy? I don't think this guy could coach his way out of a paper bag. Me and five guys named Waldo, I don't think the guy could coach, you know, and the CYO league. I mean, well, where does this tag come from? I mean, talk about an old boy network. You know, when I see this guy coach, the first thing I say is, oh, boy. I mean, I just don't know, Doc. I mean, it's unbelievable. But no, Kidd's not going to get that gig. The Russian guy wants a big name, a splashy, colorful guy, you know, grab the headlines and plus be able to coach, too. So, you know, Kidd would never get a chance, although it will provide slight salary cap relief on the part of, you know, the New York Knicks in regard to slight relief, slight. Not the huge splash.
It's amazing to talk about Kidd because your Kidd, I remember precisely sitting courtside at Madison Square Garden on the days where the press was still sitting down on courtside opposite the players' bench, and Kidd was sitting there with Brent Hill. They had both won the co-rookie of the year award, and the press. In fact, I'm looking at an autographed GQ cover of Grant Hill here in the studio, and I was walking around the museum yesterday, and I said, let me see, feel this in this pair of autographed Grant Hill sneakers. What a great human being. Nobody had better stats the first 6 years in NBA outside of Oscar Robertson and Larry Bird than Grant Hill. And just a wonderful, wonderful human being, NCAA champion. Looked like he may have had a shot at the NBA title the way the Clippers were going there at one time. But him and I thought both guys would have tried to go one more year for even 2-0. But both guys, 19 years, retired, came in the league together, and 19 years later, wow, time has flown. 19 years later, they're both retired, Jason Kidd and Grant Hill, Kidd Hall of Famer. And it was sure those first 5-6 years that Grant Hill would be a Hall of Famer, but they're both retired in the same year. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Trust and Guard Radio on Blog Talk Radio. We're back in New York City, but still, it's Sali Braza, Hester Ron, Sabajara Hotel, best three-star hotel in all of Brazil, Chapitos, GCJ Productions, which is bringing Billy Paul right now on tour in Brazil, and Marina Park. We also want to say happy Valentine's Day. Well, that won't be till the 12th. We're going to do it early, though. Teodoro, Mia Moelki. We also, birthday greetings, remembering the late Leroy Neiman, whose birthday was yesterday, 2 days ago now, and the day before that, that of Burt Randolph Sugar. Looking at other birthdays this month, Dusty Baker will have a birthday. Derek Jeter will have a birthday. The great stickball legend, Melly Mays, will have a birthday. Also, looking at Prince on the 7th, which is Bert Sugar's birthday, and Allen Iverson. They both, all three, said the birthday. Bobby Goodman, former president of boxing, the last president of boxing, Madison Square Garden, has the same birthday as our good late friend, Fry. Remember, as of yesterday, last year, on a Friday, calling Leroy Neiman and wishing him happy birthday. And within 2 weeks later, I remember getting an email from Jamie Harris that Leroy Neiman had passed away. Bob Scott, on the 22nd, Little League legend pitcher, will be giving Bob a call. His birthday, one of the great PR men, a disciple of Joey Goldstein, Dave Hersher, on the 19th. He will be celebrating another birthday. Man, you can't beat whatever is a class act he has been. And part of the last great PR man in this city and in the history of the business, Joey Goldstein. Roberto Duran, on the 16th, no one needs to be said. Greatest Latin fighter of all time, bar none. And the day before, it's Dusty Baker and our good buddy Francis Walker. Stephanie Graff, on the 14th. We want to salute Crystal Hart, our girl Crystal Hart, who is the number one and the prettiest female sportscaster in New York City. Cable Wise here. She comes on Time Warner Cable on Thursdays at 9 o'clock, Channel 56, RCN Channel 83, and Verizon FIOS Channel 34, 9 p.m. every Tuesday. She just won out on the West Coast National Award. Nobody deserved it more. I mean, nobody works harder than Crystal. We want to thank her so often that she has me do boxing, had Dusty do boxing. You know, she had a rough year last year, left 2 or 3 years. Her dad was in bad health. She's going back and forth out in the Midwest to visit her dad. Though you don't know, she's also one of the top registered nurses in New York City. So between, you know, helping humanity on a daily basis and going flying out to see her dad, and it was a tremendous toll. And you would never know by the quality show that she puts together. And she was saluted again out on the West Coast this time. She's the numerous amount of awards, and she is just a part of our family. And we are so very proud of her, and we want to salute her, Crystal Hart, legendary Crystal Hart. As I said, New York's loveliest, number one female sportscaster. And once again, Time Warner Cable, Channel 56, RCN, Channel 83, Verizon, FIOS, Channel 34. That's Tuesdays at 2 o'clock. She's covered everything. She does sports. She does entertainment. She's done a great piece on the late Bill Gallo way back. Crystal, we salute you. We love you. And she's part of our family. And we're just so elated. And, you know, last year, this time, we were talking about her passing of her dad. And we're so glad to say something of a positive nature to one of the most positive. Well, simply, I told her in the words of Muhammad Ali, this is you, Crystal, the greatest. And we here at Sports and Death on Blog Talk, Trust and Guardian Network, just want to salute you. Thank you for the friend that you have been to us. You helped us and been such an integral part of our lives as a colleague and a peer, and you're peerless. And once again, we all here at Sports and Depth just want to salute you. She's one of the pictures that we have, too. We had a tri-photo of her. It's her by herself, her with two of the other winners. So that's one of our pictures. It was Crystal Hart in the photos. Serena Williams is in the photo. Roberto Clemente is also one of the photos at Puerto Rican Day here. And we just want to say we love you, Crystal, and just congratulations. I mean, well-deserved. Nothing you haven't earned, nothing you haven't deserved. I mean, you are just the absolute best. As far as we're concerned, there's only two kind of sportscasters in this city, all the others in you, and nobody can touch you. Doc Staley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network, saluting a friend, a role model, and one of our heroes, the legendary, the lovely, Miss Crystal Hart. Gang, slide away from football because Crystal's great, so we're into boxing. Okay, Winnie, let it flow, Winnie. Some fights last night, a lot of throwing down. Lara seemed to got the win, that tremendous fight. So that was a heck of a fight, his fight. And he had the other fights. Mooney, talk to me. How'd you like him?
Well, it depends on which ones you want to talk about, Doc. I mean, there are a few very good fights.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of the names now. I keep having them in my mind and losing them as we go on.
They had the Laura against the tough Mexican. That
very
fight
good
was
fight.
He
was it Angulo was his name and Laura.
And now according to the scorecards, Angulo was up 85-83 and Laura was up 84-83. So the stop of that fight was really something that I think his corner really didn't want to happen, but it was I think it's
the eye looked terrible, Doc. The eye looked very, very bad.
Well, I mean, bad contusion.
So,
you
never want a guy's eye to be.
No question about it. Tremendous.
I thought it was a good stoppage. You know, I mean, well, I see Church is back anyway, so the reference was a stoppage. But, and you know something, Doc, about that last combination that he caught, I think that, you know, not making any excuses for the kid, but I think he did catch the thumb. I think he did get some. You're talking about the violent way that he kind of turned away, you know, immediately. I think he did catch the thumb. Up until then, though, it was a pretty good fight. It's like the master boxer against the, you know, the big puncher.
Masterful job of working the body. Like I said, Laura was up 84-83 on two cards, but Angulo was up 85-83, I mean, he dropped him twice. I mean, I'm just a heck of a fight. I mean, if he drops him, first time he drops him, those are 10-8 rounds. I mean, you're four rounds back. I mean, he made up four rounds. I mean, you're four rounds back. I mean, I'm thinking the guy at 85-80, you know, would have had Angulo up maybe more on the right path. I don't know. I mean, look, I didn't see the whole fight, but, Laura's up by one. He's a new champion now.
Yeah, well, it was the classic thing of the the master boxer, you know, he was a Cuban champion.
And
the amateurs, I think he had some crazy records, see? And that's something like 305-10 or something. I mean,
I've got to dig it up, yeah, because he was the guy that has lost that controversial fight to Paul Williams sometime.
Right.
But, you know, who would have thought that, you know, at this time that Paul Williams, I mean, well, thank God he's alive. But I have a buddy of mine who told me back in Brazil. He said, you know, one thing about a motorcycle, if you get on it, you're going to come off it. So stay off it. And, wow, you know, they still talk about Paul Williams, talking about possibly fighting again. Spoke to the Latin side of working on boxing, Gilberto Ortiz. He talked about Sergio Martinez's fight, who fought for the first time and only time in Argentina. He got dropped a couple of times there, but the second...
Right, he got his coordination, but like I said, he's also fighting, you know, with injuries. I think it was hands and elbows.
I think
retirement may not be a bad thought in his mind. I mean, obviously, he's had some, you know, pretty big money fights. He's been doing this for quite some time, getting a little bit older. Now, you know, I am in favor, and I'm going to bring up Bernard Hopkins in a second, but I really am in favor of retiring a couple of years too early rather than a couple of years too late. I really am into that.
I think Sergio, in a different vein, he's got the Lou DiBella. There are really not too many more mountains for him to conquer.
Really,
really.
A
good fight for him would be the rematch with Chavez. That's a good fight. It's a good fight, a big money fight. He should pull it out, and if he wouldn't win it, then he'd have the chance to do the trilogy, and then he could swan song it from there. He's from Argentina, so I would think the money that he gets here goes a lot further over there. He's an idol over there. And, you know, boxing is not the kind of sport. I remember Alexis Aguayo. Aguayo said, you can get killed in boxing going at 100%, so you darn sure can't go in there at less than 100%. No ifs and buts about it.
People have no idea, Doc. We're former members of the boxing writers, and C's also a seasoned reporter and knows his stuff, both boxing and wrestling, and among the other sports. Boxing, Doc, I'm not talking really to UNC, but above our fans. For the uninitiated, it's really dangerous to do, man. I mean, boxing, that stuff that you see on TV, I'm talking to our fans now, Doc.
Rooney, I'm going to use one of your lines, and you got some great ones, you know what I mean? A point well taken, and I'll use one of your lines. Rooney, you said you don't play boxing.
Dangerous. I mean, really? Folks are like, well, these guys are in shape. You know, you talk to guys probably, Doc, and you know, the average fan will be like, these guys are in shape. This is what these guys train to do. This is what they, you know, get paid for. This is what these guys do. They're fighters. That's their chosen profession. You know, all of that is well and good and true, but by the same token, people don't realize, man, that these guys are literally have their lives on the line when they walk down that aisle and walk up those three steps.
Mayweather, his last fight, he said something that was so apropos. He said, I needed my dad because the less you get hit, the longer you last. And people don't understand.
Those guys, you know, I had a shot, and Doc, you know this, we've had this talk. You know, I remember talking to Mike Tyson on a few occasions. But a bunch of times it's centered on, I said, you know, Mike, man, you're knocking these guys out too fast. I said, Mike, you know that you got folks actually thinking that what you do is easy, man? And, Doc, we had the biggest damn laugh because of the total ridiculousness of the got to the point where, and you remember Doc, guy Mike knocking guys out in a minute and a half of the first round.
I never forget where we were at. And there's a press conference. I don't know if we were Mozell. Emmanuel Stewart said, I remember when Mike Tyson was fighting. He said, I couldn't wait to get home on a Friday night to see Mike fight. I know who Mike was fighting, but I knew he was going to knock him out. And you know, you're right. I was with Mayweather, and somebody said something about Mayweather, about somebody having heart. And Floyd turned and said, hey, man, Floyd said, heart can get you killed in this game. Heart can get you killed in this game. It's just, you know, people don't understand the series. I've been ringside at two occasions where guys left the ring and died. The Willie Clausen fight against
The Willie Clausen, I'll never forget. Many moons ago.
Wilfred Sifion. Wilfred Sifion.
Right, Wilfred Sifion. Yeah, good job, Doc.
I remember because I was sitting ringside, and I remember to my right was great seats of ring. Oh, the legendary fell from God. Just thank you so much for all the great things you've done for me. Praise your name and your darling son, Jesus. And I remember the corner pushing Clausen up off the stool. And then they wind up taking him to the hospital. I remember the WFAN, the late night sportscaster and the first African American president of the Boxing Writers of America, Tony Page. And Tony was handling this fight for main events. He did a great job too, man. Off the pier there on that can't think of the name of the ship. And the guy looked great.
Intrepid.
I mean, The Intrepid. On
Intrepid.
On Intrepid. And the guy looked great. He came back and fought well for the round, but he wound up going to the hospital and dying. I mean, this is a tough business. And like I said, Alexis Aguayo, you can go in that ring, you know, at 100% and get killed. Mayweather, you know, you can get killed. Heart can get you killed in this business. And you're right. The guys who master this and people understand how much dedication it is and how easy they make it. Jose Torres, my late friend Jose Torres, told me, Ali, he said, no, Ali did everything wrong. Everything wrong. Kept his hands down low. He backed up. Everything
back
he told somebody
punches,
not to do.
Yeah, everything
he told somebody not to do, Ali did.
Doc, you're right.
Yeah, everything he told somebody not to do, Ali did it. What was that?
But look at Pacquiao's last fight when he got knocked out. I mean, he was out before he hit the canvas.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
was out, and then what? And I must bring this up. I mean, if you don't realize how big these guys are, when me
really
and Lady
big,
A
yeah.
went to the Boxing Hall of Fame up in Canastota this year, and we happened to look at the fist casting of previous inductees. You know, I looked at George Foreman, but Lennox Lewis. A lot of people don't know this guy's
that guy
hands.
Is.
Was his, the only hands that I saw that were bigger than his were Bone Crushers. That was
That's
it.
My guy, the Crusher, Bone Crusher Smith. By the way, who's also known, my guy James Bone Crusher Smith. Mike Tyson once told me that when he was at the press conference and getting ready to fight Bone Crusher as the next opponent, he, you know, Mike used to always say that he'd like to kind of work up a healthy dislike, you know, for whoever the opponent
yeah,
was
yeah.
that is going to fight to make his job a little bit easier, you know, a little
right,
bit
right.
of dislike there. And he said he tried to dislike Bone Crusher and just couldn't do it, Doc. He said,
wow.
I would see, he said that, you know, he'd be at the press conference with him and he'd make these googly eyes and stuff, but he'd just
yeah,
fall on
yeah.
the floor laughing.
Yeah, yeah.
Kevin McBride, who defeated Mike Tyson in
right,
his last
the final fight.
Right, he was up at the Hall of Fame, and I took a picture with him. This guy was massive. His hands were massive. Could you imagine? You're being punched with this through a glove, and it's knocking you out. Could you imagine? When Mitch Green got punched by Mike Tyson and with a naked fist when they got into that confrontation on 125th Street many
well,
years ago,
there's
could
a story
you imagine?
Of Stanley Ketchel, and the reason why I remember Stanley Ketchel's name because when I was in the military and throughout Air Force Base, the nickname that the guys gave me was after Stanley Ketchel, called me Kidnapper Stanley Ketchel. I had a hat with a name on it, and Ketchel, who was a middleweight champion of the world, fought Jack Johnson, the first African-American heavyweight champion of the world, December 26, 1908. And, Jack, was carrying Ketchel, and Ketchel the middleweight, he's fighting heavyweight, and Ketchel had the audacity to knock Jack Johnson down. And Jack said, okay, no more. As my last great partner as a police officer, Dave Ortiz would say, okay, no more, Mr. Nice Guy. Jack got up and knocked out Ketchel. They said when they looked into the glove that he hit Ketchel with, there was two of Ketchel's teeth in the glove. Jack Johnson.
Yeah. And
people
see,
don't
it's
realize
funny that
how
you should mention.
Are.
You know, it's funny that C-Wing should mention, you know, the size of those guys and the size of their fists. I was just watching the real Rockies some days ago, Chuck Webner. And in between fights, you know, he wanted to make some money. So they suggested that he have a boxer versus wrestler fight with the late Andre the Giant. Now, they showed Chuck Webner's fist. You know, they were posing, you know, for the pre-fight. Monstrous,
right.
As you were saying, monstrous-sized fist. I mean, Webner went about, what, 6'4", 6'5", almost 6'6".
Big guy,
big burly guy, big fist, huge hand. And see, when they put Andre's fist next to his, you couldn't see it. Andre's fist was so big that it completely engulfed Chuck Webner's entire fist. Now, next to regular people, you look at Chuck Webner and say, wow, this guy's the biggest fan I've ever seen. He should be in the NBA with Connie Hawkins. But next to the fist of Andre the Giant, who, by the way, I don't have to tell C or you, Doc, they listed that for the uninitiated, 7'4", and in the later stages of career, in the 500-pound area, an absolute brute. Even when he was young and up and coming, the guy was right about then when it's coming up, the guy's about 7'2", 385.
I mean, what people don't understand is, Doc, even in the
sports entertainment business, I'm sorry, see, you were saying?
They don't realize, and like you were saying, when you say a professional athlete, these are the best of the best of the best
of the best.
Of the best.
Yeah. But you know something, Doc, and see, I got to say this before we go. I'd be remiss. You know what kills me about pro athletes and what have you, Doc? Everybody thinks they have a guy, some big guy that they know, excuse me, either some friend or relative, who goes about 6'6", 6'5", 6'6", 6'7". And everybody thinks, you know, Big Steve had a chance to train with those guys for a couple of months. Steve would hang out with those guys. And he'd be like, you know, Steve could play a little bit ball. If Steve had a chance to hang out with those guys a little bit in practice, I bet Steve could be on some NBA bench. Until you realize, you know, they had this show that they called it Pros versus Joes. I know you two are familiar with it. With guys who are like hot shots in high school and college facing guys who are like in the NBA like 10, 12, 15 years ago. You know, the Sean Kemps of the world and stuff. And even now, 10, 12, 15 years removed, these guys are still bigger than these guys who played college ball and stuff and high school ball who thought they were hot shots. Still bigger, 15, 20 years removed from their playing days, and these guys still wouldn't have a prayer in you know where of playing with them and playing against them. I mean, like he said, like you know, Doc, these guys automatically they're usually bigger than the average person just by, you know, whatever they play, be it basketball, football, boxing, whatever. Usually that means that they're automatically, just because of what they did for a living, are in better shape. And people don't realize, see, I know you do that. You know, those wrestlers, those fighters, those guys playing pro ball, those guys are brutes. Pain is the name of their game. Trust me. You know,
and they're getting bigger.
Yeah. I mean, I was watching, and see, I know you're familiar with this, watching wrestling the other day, because it's still near and dear to my heart, because I know how hard it is to do. And I saw a guy go into the pole that holds up the turnbuckles, and I remember going into that pole. Folks don't realize that those steel poles have absolutely no give. None. They will not move a half inch no matter how hard you slam into them. Folks have no idea the punishment that those people take.
Rudy, could you how much give do those poles have, Rudy?
Zero, nada. They don't move half an inch no matter how hard you slam into them. And I'm not talking about what I heard and she knows. I'm talking about what we both know. Those ring poles have not an half inch of giving them. When you hit those, you might as well be hitting the brickest of wall.
My goodness.
It's like running into one of the red oak trees in California.
That thing
is not going anywhere.
Hey, Wings, I like Rooney says they have N-O, nada, and every conceivable, like, even in hand language. No give. I'm going to wait. She said they have no give. Doc Stanley giving you real quick a quick break here. Sports and Depth on Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardrail Network. Once again, it's Sal E. Brazza Restaurant, Chaba Jara, the best pizza hotel in all of Brazil, Marina Park Hotel, DCJ Productions, and Chipito's. Billy Paul is in Brazil now. He'll be opening on the 11th in Sao Paulo. On the 12th, he will be doing the Valentine's Day show. Feliz Dia de Namorada for everybody in Brazil. And then on the 14th, he will be in Fortaleza, Brazil. The Heat heated up. A 33-5 run was all that they needed. And bing, bang, slam, bam, is a 1-1 series. The Spurs are happy to get that first game. They'll go back to San Antonio in the 2-3-2 format. There could be no more NBA Finals if things work. The Spurs were. If not, They'll be back to Miami. Next two games will be played in San Antonio. Serena Williams, once again, wins her second and the first in 10 years. French Open, her 16th overall title. The oldest lady ever to regain the number one ranking, and by many, the greatest female tennis player ever. Yesterday, wrapped up a 6-4 win to win her 16th Grand Slam title. And there was no Triple Crown winner, but every big event, the Preakness, Kentucky Derby, and the Belmont Stakes, Malice Palace. Yesterday was the winner, as every race was won by a different horse. There'll be no Triple Crown winner, not since the firm in 1978 when he beat Ali Dor. I happened to be there, too. I wish I had held on to that ticket. I didn't think about that now. At that fight, at that race, big fight last night, as we told you about. Paulie Malignaggi, 22nd this month, will be fighting, defending his title in Brooklyn next month. The oldest man ever to win a world championship. B-Hop, Brandon Hopkins, executioner, will be back at the Barclays Center, defending his Hi, too. You heard the big fights that are coming up. Yes. Marquez against Timothy Bradley. Brandon Rios against Manny Pacquiao. And it's done. Alvarez, the man who will be the first man to beat Floyd Mayweather Jr., says Rooney.
I have predicted that. Fight, that.
It's predicted. It's already done. Predicted.
I
said
predicted
it many
that.
Times.
And I want big props if it happens, too, Doc. I want you guys to gloss over it. I want big props because I am the very first person to predict on your show, as you know. And
okay.
The reason is I see something.
Let me see something. I wish Lady A was here. Hold on to next week till Lady A's back so y'all can discuss this again.
We'll be the first to hand Floyd his first.
Floyd Mayweather.
We'll get rid of
the
O.
Get rid of the
first loss to the professional.
First loss. No, I was. It's, you know, funny things happen. Not funny. You know, the great line I read, God has a plan and God is in control. Beyonce said that too. And I was in Fortaleza, Brazil, and I'm sitting there from my buddy from the West Coast, Tom, and his friend Chris. And I have Chris who ordered my book his last name. He's an actor. He was the driver of the airplane in the movie, Tom Cruise movie, where I forget the name, with Tom Cruise was shipwrecked, plane wrecked. Tom Hanks.
Oh, Tom Hanks in what was that movie? Castaway.
And he was telling an amazing story, and because I remember about 3 years ago when I first met Deja Cortomas, introduced me to a gentleman, my name is Steve Glazer. Glazer, as a youth, moved from Brooklyn, New York, to Brooklyn, São Paulo, and learned the language. Still speaks Portuguese. I mean, this man speaks Portuguese fluently. He reads it. He interprets. He can interpret. People have him copy. I mean, Brazilians have him interpret the Portuguese into English and vice versa for them. And he told a story of, as a youth, it's about 9 o'clock in the morning. You know how it is for school. And his limousine pulls up. Two blonde-haired guys get out. And one guy is teaching them how to pitch. He's a left-handed guy. And the other guy is showing the kids how to hit. That's about 20 minutes old. The guy's leaving everything. And Steve said, you know, it hit them later on that it was Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford. And then Chris was telling the story of, because he knows Debbie Reynolds, and he said, Billy Graham called Debbie Reynolds. Hello, Debbie. Have you seen Marilyn? Billy Graham and Marilyn Monroe friends. Yeah, he says, I had this horrible dream about that last night. I've got to speak to Marilyn. Debbie said, well, now, I'm going to a fair. I said, okay, you know, call her or tell her, because I had this horrible dream about it last night. And Debbie went to the affair, and I believe Chris said that they were both so busy, they never got a chance to talk. Well, the next day, Marilyn Monroe died. That's the day that she was killed. So he dreamed the night before, Billy Graham. I mean, the fact that Billy Graham, you would never think that Billy Graham and Marilyn Monroe, I mean, nothing. There's nothing wrong with that. But you know, you would just not think. I remember going to a dinner. Me and the great Larry Hardesty, who brings the show on greatest African sportscast in the history of New York City radio, and the sideline reporter. I remember we were black tie dinner affair, and sure enough, man, I walked in my man Joe Frisch and Bob Hayes. Hey, Joe. Hey, Bob. Jim, forgive me if I'm retelling the story. I said, wow, man. I said, Bob, I didn't know you were a boxing fan. And Bob and Joe look at each other, boxing fan? Justin, man, he was my roommate in the Olympics. Bob Hayes and Joe Frazier were roommates in the Olympics. In the 1964 Olympics, they were roommates. As you know, Hayes went on to become a Hall of Famer and a great player with the Dallas Cowboys. Joe Frazier was the first African-American to win the Olympic gold medal and came on to win the heavyweight championship.
You know what's so funny about that, Doc? Pardon me for interrupting you. That's funny that Bullet Bob Hayes would be the roommates with Joe Frazier. One guy could run rings around you, and the other guy would chase you out of the ring.
Yeah. Tremendous point, Rooney. And the thing about it is that Joe not only won the greatest fight in history of mankind, was the first guy to ever beat Ali. And Joe only lost four fights, only lost to two fighters, Ali twice, and he lost to Foreman twice. And in that circle of fight, the five fights they had, he beat Ali the first time. And I remember the second fight he fought Foreman, fought at the Nassau Coliseum.
Isn't it true that Joe only got to be the heavyweight rep at the Olympics because the guy that was actually ahead of him for that broke his hand or something?
That's right. Buster Mathis was the guy. And you're right, because Joe told that story. I think Joe told the story on the show here with us. Joe went along as insurance because they said, well, we never carried Joe along. You're right. Doc Stanley. Ladies and gentlemen, this is why you can't beat the crew. It's once again, Sports in Depth, bringing an in-depth perspective, okay, and an in-depth view that you hear no place else about not only the sports, okay, but the people and the stars who perform that. And we're telling you about boxing and Joe Frazier, that's right, Joe hadn't made the team. Joe wasn't even a second. Joe was just a, Rooney on the money, Joe was just a carry along. And what happened? The rest of the day is history. Joe Frazier became the first African-American to win the heavyweight gold medal, first man to beat Muhammad Ali, and he only lost to two fighters. That was both to Joe, that was both to Ali and to Foreman. He fought Foreman the second time. He left the fight live at the Nassau Coliseum, and Elizabeth Taylor was in attendance. And we here, by the grace of God, had Joe Frazier on our show months before him leaving us, and we had a great time with him. I remember the classic line. He said, "Hey fellas, I gotta go." So Joe said, "I love you like a hog loves slop." And Howard Western was the one that got that for us. It was we had them on because nobody wanted to recognize Ali Frazier won, which was in Howard Western's mind. Great line that should be coined to sad and touching. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio. On the Trust and Guard Radio Network. General, we're probably ready to wrap this up here.
I got to tell you a quick story. Is Steve Wings still with us?
Yeah, Wings, what is, you know, Wings ain't going to place. When you go talk wrestling, you know he ain't going to place. Quit acting like you ain't said this.
Quick,
go ahead.
Quick story, Doc. True story. Talking to Captain, the late, really good guy, the late, great Captain Lou Albano once.
Uh-huh.
He says they were young wrestlers way back in the day, young wrestlers working out in the gym. He said it was himself, the late, great, and I mean great, tough guy, Walter Killer Kowalski.
Wow.
Were, you know, lifting weights, working out, and, you know, working out in the gym. Young wrestlers back then had only been in the wrestling business for a year or two.
He said,
in walked Bruno Sammartino. So Bruno says, "Hey, Albano, what's the world's record?"
Yeah, you tell Ronnie, you heard this story 80 times already.
Which at the time was held by the Russian strongman Vasily Alexia, which I believe the record at the time was 510 pounds.
Rudy,
he
can
says,
you spell
Bruno
his name?
Throws, I'm sorry, what was that, Doc?
Can you spell his name, Rooney?
Whose name? Alexia?
Yeah.
Well, he had a host of Olympic gold medals, Doc. So, you know, he's really, you know, well known as the Russian strongman. Pump full of juice, but that's a whole other matter. And he said it was about 510 pounds.
Uh-huh.
So he says Bruno throws 520 on the bench, does one rep, and walks out with disdain.
Could you tell us? Could you tell that story one more time how you thought it was an exhibition?
Well, actually, it was the first time I had ever gotten the ring and seen when the ring will recognize this. I was at Gleason's gym working out with what we call our wrestling guru, the unpredictable, by the way, the WF Hall of Famer, the unpredictable Johnny Rod.
Okay, okay.
And he said, I'm going to have you work with this guy. He's from Poland. We're billing him as the Polish heavyweight champion. So I said, okay. So this guy went about 5'11", 6 feet, about 240, 245.
Uh-huh.
And so it was my first time, you know, acting in the ring. I was a hot shot amateur wrestler, wrestled in high school, pretty good as an amateur, was making my transition to the pros. So this is my first time actually in the pro ring. So I'm supposed to work with this guy. So I'm like, okay, you're going to make this look real good, pal. This is going to be good for the both of us. Well, Doc, I don't know if you've ever seen the Rocky movie with Hulk Hogan. The Rocky movie with Hulk Hogan where he says, okay, we're going to make this good. You know, we're just going to move around the ring. I'll throw a couple of jabs, whatever. So, anyways, Doc, the same exact thing happens with me and this guy. So I said, okay, we're going to make it look good, good show, you know, work out the kinks. Well, Doc, I hook up and tie up with this guy, and he hits me so hard that I drop to my knees and I look up at this guy the exact same way that Rocky looked up at Hulk Hogan, like, what the hell was that? I thought this was an exhibition. And you see, I thought of looking at this guy like, what the hell was that? Hey Doc, that gave new meaning to the words baptism under fire.
Oh my goodness! Didn't you say you went to Arvis later and asked about that?
Yeah, because I'm like, hey Doc, you know, because I had the same. You have to remember, man, I was a wrestler in the amateurs, which is like just worlds away from the pros. I mean,
it's just
worlds away, you know. I mean, half that stuff, you get disqualified. I mean, I once body slammed the guy in the amateurs and got immediately disqualified, so that shows the difference right away. So I walked in the office and I'm like, hey, Johnny. Hey, Doc, excuse my ignorance, okay, but everybody thinks this at first. I thought this was going to be like those spaghetti westerns in the bar scenes, okay?
Hey Doc,
hey, see, I thought this was like those spaghetti westerns where they like drag you across the bar and your nose runs into the beer and you. So I'm like, hey Johnny, I'm like, I just got out of the ring with this guy. You saw what went on. Hey, I thought this was an exhibition, okay?
I love it, baby.
So anyway, I say, well, let me ask you, man, if that's going to be the case, okay, and we're not going to make this look good, but we're going to do all-out battle, I mean, like, what is the code? I'm a rookie. You know that. How hard am I supposed to hit these guys? Because, yo, if it's like that, I can get down with that, okay? And I'll never forget what he told me, Doc. See, as you know, it turned out to be absolutely true. Best advice I ever got, Doc. I hit them as hard as they hit me. Trust me, I learned to live by that code right quick, okay? I hit them as hard as they hit me, okay? Because like, I was under the impression that, hey, everybody likes everybody. They're going to make it look good. So when we get out in front of the fans, you're going to give them a good show.
Hey, Rudy, you thought it was an exhibition.
Hey, Doc, let me tell you something. You can laugh all you want, but she'll back me up on this, okay? I found out through wrestling and the pros, you really can see stars. You really can see them.
Only in America. Gang, Dr. Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trusted Guardian Network. Leave you with three thoughts. Live your life today and to stand before God tomorrow. Life's most important position question is, what are you doing for the service of others? Is rent you pay for your space here on Earth? Rooney, no, C-Wings, what do you want to say to the world before we close out? What's on your mind?
I just want to say an exhibition is not always what it exhibits.
Rooney, can you follow up on that for us, Rooney?
Oh. Hey, Doc, I'll put it this way. As the great Diamond Dallas Page once said, hey, suppose I'm working with a guy that I don't particularly like, and say even better that he doesn't particularly like me. So we start the match off, and he hits me with a chop that I think is a little harsh. So I come back a little harder with mine. Well, you know something? Things get real, real, real fast.
Love that. Hold on, Larry Harsey. You got something to say.
Thank you for joining us for this installment of Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. We hope you join us, and please tell a friend about Sports in Depth, heard every Wednesday and Friday from 12 to 2 p.m. on SAR-FM Radio, the heartbeat of Africa, in the heartbeat of the Big Apple, New York City, in the heartbeat of Harlem.
Well, and with that, we're going to pull on out of here. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Radio Network. Hey, he's been here, Mel Cosell Smith Jr., a.k.a. Little Kelco, a.k.a. Rooney, a.k.a. I thought it was an exhibition. And Mr. NFL 411, Cincinnati Sea Wings, Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. Sports in Depth. We're back here next week. Free thoughts. Live your life today. And have a stand before God tomorrow. Life's purpose is our urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others? Did you pay me space on earth? I simply say, from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all, and trust in God. Sally Brazzer, Sabajara Hotel, DCJ Productions, Shapiro's, Marina Park Hotel, the Russian, Sports in Depth, on Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Network. God bless you all, and trust in God.
who really cares? There'll come a time,
there'll come a time,
when the world won't be singing,
when the world won't be singing,
flowers won't grow,
flowers won't grow, no,
bells won't be ringing,
no, bells won't be ringing,
who really cares? Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save a world?
To save a world
that's destined to
that
die.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world,
when I look at the world,
it fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today,
children today,
really gonna suffer tomorrow,
really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to
such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
When we can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
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 Live for life.
Life.
Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
You see, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
Save the babies. Save the babies. And if you want to live,
but who really cares? Who's willing to try? Yeah, to save our world. Yeah, save our sweet world. Save a world that is destined to die.
There is no place left Are you lonely, Jay? Lonely, Jay? Oh, no.